Hello, and thank you for tuning in to Life, Love, Marriage, Divorce, the podcast. I'm your host, Monique Davis-Dotson, and I'm here with a very special guest and dear friend of mine. Her name is Carla Dawson. She's a wife, a mother, and she's also a co-host on The Boss and the Gloss on SB Nation radio show about sports. And I want to say thank you, Carla, for doing this with me. I'm so happy that you're at the mic with me.
I'm honored that you asked me.
Well, I'm excited. So tell me a little bit about The Boss and the Gloss. How did you become a co-host of this great show?
This was an accident. Well, I guess there's no accidents with
no
God,
accidents
right?
With God, right?
So I grew up in a household where my dad was a sports fanatic. We had one game on one TV, the sound off, another game on a radio. That's when people used radio.
Yeah.
And whatever. And so if I wanted to be with my dad, which I did,
yeah,
I went to everything with him. So grew up just a lifelong diehard. I grew up in the Oakland area. So yeah, the Raiders, the A's, the Warriors. I know people in Houston don't like that. But nonetheless. And then, so I've always had this love for sport. Yeah. And through my kids' school, you know, we meet the parents and all this. And this one dad and I, he and I would always talk about the latest game, whatever it was. Right. Well, years later, he ended up buying a radio station in Houston. Mm-hmm. And it's now the largest media company in all of Houston. But he came to me 3 or 4 years ago and said, I've got an hour on the radio. I want you to do a show. And I said, oh, no. I'm not trained. I can't do this and that. And he said, you don't understand. People don't give people hours on radio. No, most people have to pay for
That's
it.
That's right.
So I tried it out, and it was started out a couple years ago as a 1 hour show locally pre-recorded with another lady.
Okay.
And then she ended up not being able to do it after a few years. So now it's a 2 hour national show with my boss. Asked him, the one who asked me to do it. I said, well, you need to step in the ring with me.
Yeah.
So now we're in like 80 markets nationwide. And
it is a good show. I've listened to it.
Thank you for saying that, because
it's really
you
good.
Know your stuff.
Well, not as well as you. I don't think. I mean, you're like on it. I'm like, she knows so much about
sports.
I'm a bit
sassy.
Oh, I love it. I love it. And I think it's a great, you know, platform for women who, and for men, you know. But a lot of times women are like, I don't know about this sport. Or I don't. But you guys kind of teach along the way.
Oh, it's very true. You We're very layman's term.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think that's what people need to fall in love with different sports that they probably would never,
right?
You know,
or be able to know what to talk to your husband about.
Exactly,
or, you know, kind of thing.
Exactly. But see, I'm with you because I would be like, yeah. We were just talking about OU and the girls' softball, the ladies' softball. They lost, but anyways. But it's just really good to be well versed about everything.
Yeah,
you know?
It is.
I think
it's tricky in a man's world, but you know what? It's getting better.
It's
women
getting
are infiltrating,
better.
Which is nice.
I think so. Because you see a lot of, right now, you see a lot of female sports commentators and
that are
hosts
really
that are
good.
Really, really, really good. And back in the day, you would see a sprinkle of them.
Right.
So
right.
I enjoy
You're
seeing
You're next,
it.
Money.
Hey, we'll see what happens.
God first, sports second.
I know, right? So tell me a little bit about growing up in Oakland.
That was interesting. I loved growing up in California
and
in Oakland. And one thing I will say is that Oakland people are passionate about everything.
About everything.
I mean, almost to a fault.
Yeah.
As you know, if you've ever gone in the black hole of the Oakland Coliseum to see a Raiders game.
Let me tell you, I have. It was crazy.
Have you ever?
Oh, my Lord.
And they've been terrible for a long time, but the fans don't care.
They don't care. Mm-hmm. But I mean, so I was there because I was a part of the Raiders. I didn't come in there as like, you know.
As the opponent,
so it was okay. But even there, I was just like, my head was going back and forth like a tennis match. And I'm like, oh my gosh, they are serious.
Oh,
but you know what? Mm-hmm. Hey. That's just a part of it, right?
It's a part of it. And it's great to have fans like that. And it's great for the city, too, to have these teams that they just, they're diehards for.
And they come together. They come together. And they're like, this is our team. How do you feel about them leaving? I couldn't believe that they're going to Vegas.
Again.
Well, yeah, but come on. Vegas.
No,
I
don't
believe
it.
Yeah, I mean, L.A., and then they got a lot of sense and they came back. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
It's like, okay, let's
The LA experiment did not work for them.
No, it did not work.
So I can't believe
Because they shouldn't have left in the first place, in my opinion. Okay. But this Las Vegas thing, I'm just like, I can't even understand it.
No, to have a football team, especially of the caliber of the Oakland Raiders, yes. go into Sin City.
Come on.
Not a good idea.
I don't think
and
that's
a good idea. There's not a fan base there. I mean, honestly, I mean, fans will travel. Oakland fans will travel. Yeah. But they're not going to have a fan base. It's a tourist destination. It's exactly. transient.
Exactly.
But Las Vegas, it's all about the dollar. Yeah. And they wanted an NFL team badly.
Yeah.
And honestly, the city of Oakland, you've seen the Coliseum.
Yeah.
Where Oracle, where the Warriors play, is the oldest arena in the NBA. I mean, the city of Oakland is not doing anything
right.
for their team. Right. So it's a bit their fault, but I don't yeah. love it. I'll love the Raiders always because it's not their fault. But
yeah, I hate it too. I'm like, what's going on with you with the city of Oakland? Don't you know? I mean, come on.
They're not willing to pay up.
So then you chance losing your team.
So they're losing the Warriors to San Francisco. They're going into a $1.5 billion Chase Arena.
Yeah.
You're losing the Raiders to Las Vegas.
Yeah.
The A's are still there, but who knows how long that's going to be.
They might be next. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I mean, we hate it. Look, we're already talking about sports, so.
I know. This is what I say. I might have to bring you in, Monique.
I'm with the gloss.
It's going to be the boss. The boss, the gloss, and the godly.
That's a good one. All right. So I wanted to, the reason I asked Carla to be on my show is because our connection began at JOL, which is our women's Bible study that we go to at our Chapelwood United Methodist Church. And so Carla comes in to our Bible study group, because we have a small group, just give you guys a little bit of, you know, what goes on in Bible study. We have a small group, and then we leave and we go into the larger group where all the groups come together. But however, our connection began in our small group, and we always pray for one another. And Carla came in and she told us the story about her husband, and that he was going through some health challenges with his heart. And so we'll start there. And so, of course, our connection got really strong because we were just prayer warriors for her husband. Mm-hmm. And that's just what you do as women who love the Lord and sisters in Christ.
So and your book got published during that
my
year,
book,
too.
Yeah, Blessings and Love, Daily Devotional got published that year as well. So we had a lot of good things going on with that on my side. And then the good thing about it is that we couldn't see during the time because it was very stressful for you to go through
a
challenging health challenge with your husband. And so let's go backwards and then we'll go forward. And I'm inviting her because I want y'all to see what God did and how good God is. And when you pray and you keep your faith in Him, the impossible is always possible.
Oh, it's so true. And yeah. He's still doing.
Still working.
That's what's so amazing.
Yeah.
I feel like what he's definitely showed us is that when you honor me, Carla, wait till you see how I honor you. Mm-hmm. Like you can't even fathom.
You can't fathom. How did it all happen with your husband and his heart? Like go back into.
How it all started.
How it all started.
Okay, so if you all saw him now, and Monique, see him.
Yeah, we just did our little elbow pump.
Yes, yeah. He's not yet at hugging, yeah. handshaking stage.
And I was already like, and then I remembered, girl, you can't hug him. Get back. Because that's just me. I was like, elbow.
I don't even hug him yet. We still do a lot of this.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's okay. What he's comfortable with until this all gets situated. So if you saw him, 6'4", 200 pounds, doesn't drink, doesn't smoke, exercises all the time, just Mr. Healthy, great diet, and one of the sickest people, you know, a year ago for sure, that you've ever seen. So when he was in his 20s and had just graduated college, got the, you know, big investment banking job in New York, working around the clock, and just thought he was feeling terrible. It was just overworked, potato chips, pizza, mm-hmm. all night at the office kind of thing was what it was. Anyway, got a very rare form of cancer, a T-cell non-Hodgkin's lymphoblastic leukemia. And when they discovered it, which is about 9 months into his job in New York, he was 22, mm-hmm. they said it's everywhere. He had a tumor in his chest, in all of his lymph nodes. They gave him 2 weeks to live.
Wow.
And that was not good. So they basically blasted him with some combination chemotherapy. like a napalm bomb, and the cancer was gone in 4 days. But then he was continued to be treated. So can you imagine what that dose was like?
I can't even imagine.
So they continued to treat him for 4 years with chemotherapy. He never had radiation, but he went through a full bone marrow transplant. Mm-hmm. And at that point, you lived in isolation for about 6 weeks, and meaning no one could come in except nurses. And if I brought him a magazine or something, I didn't even know him at the time, it would be shrink wrapped and have to go into a special door. I mean, it was very different than it is now. Anyway, he ended up surviving that, which is amazing in itself.
Which is a miracle in itself.
Yes, and I met him 4 years into remission. We got married his fifth year into remission, and really, he's been cancer-free for all those years. Then, when he turned about 40, I guess it was when he was 40, he kept getting dizzy during his workday. And so, went to the doctor to get it checked out, and they did an EKG and discovered that he has an enlarged heart. And they said, they figured out it was a result of the chemotherapy. And they still to this day use the same chemotherapy, just much, much, much smaller doses. They didn't know then.
Right.
No one survived that cancer at that point. So they just did whatever they could. And now they realize they can do a lot less. So at the age of 40, he had a pacemaker put in because the heart was not regular, whatever it was. So from 40 until 50, early 50s, incident free. I guess about halfway through that time, he also had a defibrillator put in because they said, you have heart failure and you're at a stage that's manageable, but
just in case. Yeah.
So he had basically a box in his chest, and it was pretty big, but whatever. He handled it well. And then about, I would say, the past 5 years, things have been going downhill steadily, meaning can't walk upstairs.
And this is after the defibrillator.
This is about 10 years after it was put in.
Okay.
And, we would have different situations where we'd be on a family vacation and he could not, he'd have to stand still if we were playing tennis.
Wow.
Or wouldn't be able to just, but then we'd come back and see the doctor, they'd adjust the meds, it would all be better. Anyway, about 2 years ago, he got the flu, and his defibrillator went off for the first time.
Oh my!
And this was a year ago, December.
Okay.
And it was that terrible flu season where people were dying.
Everybody was sick. Yeah.
And he didn't know the thing had gone off because he passed out and shocked him back into life. Anyway, from that December through that June, he was never okay. And that's when we were praying hard.
Yeah.
And on top of it, and I didn't really understand the gravity of it because he was very anxious about, is he going to make it through each and every day? He got depressed. He didn't really want to talk to our daughters when they called. He was obsessed with his health and how he felt. And, had I known what I know now, I could understand it better.
Yeah.
But I was like, you're fine.
Yeah.
I've watched you for the past 10 years. So I'm shameful to admit that. But, so last June, we were at our daughter's college graduation, almost a year ago, and in the middle of the night, his defibrillator went off the night before graduation. So when we got back from graduation, we knew, we can't keep having this.
Exactly.
There's going to be a time where that's not going to work. So we went into the doctor, and they ran some blood work, and usually they just adjust medicines, and that's fine. Anyway, they took a look at his blood work and said, credit Methodist Hospital here in Houston. They were so great. They just said, we're going to admit you. These numbers, they're not what we want to see. So we need to admit you, which what we thought would be a couple days, adjust some medicine. And we went home 65 days later.
Mm-hmm.
We spent the entire summer there.
Yeah.
And we spent the summer there waiting for a heart, that was never a part of any conversation we had with the doctors. It was always adjusting medicine, adjusting the pacemaker, getting a different defibrillator. Never was this an option. But when they ran the blood work, they didn't tell me. So he was admitted. And about 2.5 weeks later, he was stable. So, when he was at the bottom of the barrel. So when we went into what we thought was a doctor's appointment.
So his heart was failing. It was failing.
So there's different stages of heart failure.
Right.
And he had always had manageable heart failure.
Right.
So there when they told us, they said, the numbers that we admitted you, the one number measures heart failure. Okay. And it's called your cardiac output. So for you and me, Monique, our cardiac output would be between 6 and 8.
Okay.
And that's good. And that's normal. And that shows no signs of heart failure. For someone with heart failure, they want to see the output between 4 to 6, hopefully. Mm-hmm. He was at 1.2, and at 1.1 is death.
Oh my God.
So that's the stage he walked into the hospital.
Oh my Lord.
And he just has, and I think through his cancer, like a horrible, horrible situation, but he has such a resolve and to live.
Yeah.
And he knew, you know, when he was going through the cancer and he would come in for treatments and the person that was at bed A, the bed was made. You know, you knew that, what had happened there. But he said, you know, I just knew God was not, he was not ready to take me then. Right. So he really had a great attitude through
faith.
That. Strong faith.
Strong faith.
But I'll tell you, through this couple years before we were admitted to Methodist this past summer, his faith was really,
Well, you get tired sometimes. You know what I'm saying?
Exhausted.
Like, okay, God, you let me make it through this. You let me make it through this. And a lot of us experience that, don't we?
Yeah.
It's like, it's too much.
It doesn't have to be physical. It can
exactly.
be mental. You know, it's just.
Exactly.
Yeah, you just think, no, God did not. Was he not looking at me? Is he not realizing I
can't
do this?
How much more are you going to give me? You know, a lot of times they say, God won't give you more than you can handle.
I know.
And you're like,
you're not
hello.
Ready to hear that when you're...
You know what I'm saying? You're like, hello, this is it. This is my threshold. So I could definitely understand how he would step back a little bit.
Yeah.
You know,
it's really questioning.
Yeah, it happens.
I mean, trying not to, but it was hard.
Yeah.
It was really hard. So about 4 days into the hospital stay, he said, you know, when am I going home? Like, when are you sending me home? And that's when they told us he needed a heart transplant.
That's when they told you.
And they, yes.
Because they could see that it wasn't improving.
Oh, weeks later, we got the full scoop, which was the day he was admitted, they did not know he would make it through the night.
Oh, my God.
All of his numbers were so terrible. And they said he's the youngest person in the cardiac care, intensive care, and the sickest person. Like, we just...
They hadn't
one
even
doctor,
seen it before.
No.
Mm-hmm.
And not at his age.
Yeah.
And looking at him,
yeah.
he's a good faker because he looks so
he
healthy.
Looks, yeah.
But the doctor was on a 12-hour shift, and he said, I did another 12-hour, because I said, I cannot leave with this guy here. So they were incredible. And then you have to start a transplant evaluation process. You can't just wait for a heart. They check every inch of your body, every inch of it to make
because
sure.
Because they're putting this in your body and it can reject. So they have to go through everything. So that had to be tiring as well.
Well, it usually takes a couple months, and they did it in 5 days.
Oh, my Lord.
Because they said he's not going to make it a couple months.
Yeah.
So at the very last stage, and it's everything. You're having kidney doctors check you and ultrasounds and CAT scans and for every bit of you. And the very last step was a scan of the head and neck.
Mm-hmm.
And they just want to make sure they can't put a heart in someone that has cancer and, you know, this kind of thing, whatever. So no big deal. Well, they find a spot on his thyroid.
Mm.
Like, really?
I remember this, yeah.
You think, there can't be anything
exactly.
more. Like, this is enough. Like, he was not well. I mean, he couldn't really sit up. He couldn't get out of bed, this kind of thing. So it was a 10-day delay in doing the biopsy. The biopsy showed not normal cells, the size of it, the this and that. And then the surgery date was scheduled to just remove the thyroid.
Mm-hmm.
Because if there was some cancer, let's just get it off.
Right.
He wasn't well enough to have
to
the surgery. They said he might not make it off the table.
Oh, my Lord.
So finally, the amount of stress, and I would leave the hospital at night. I never stayed at night because he didn't want me to. He said, I've got round-the-clock care.
Mm-hmm.
But I found that I needed to believe this was going to be okay.
Mm-hmm.
But it was just what you were saying. Like, God,
really? Yeah.
Like, he's on his last bit anyway.
Yeah.
We need a heart. And so driving home from the hospital, I never turned on the radio, but I just out loud found every reason I could praise God. Like, I praise you, God, that we're in Houston.
Mm-hmm.
I praise you, God, that we're at Methodist Hospital.
Right, right.
I praise you that you are a good God,
yes.
that you are a faithful God. And I would have to literally, I mean, I know deep in my heart of hearts I believed it, but at the point I'm like, really?
Yeah.
But I knew if I'm praising him, I can't doubt him.
Exactly.
So I made my, that was my exercise.
Exactly. And then when you say that, I'm over here tearing up because I remember it. Ugh. And then I remember, you know, you said, hey, pray for us. And we would get, we have our email chains. Yep. And so that kept us all in the loop because there were times you couldn't come, you know, right. But we had to pray. And, but what you just said about praising God through your circumstance is what he actually wanted you to get to in that intimate relationship with him of trust. And so somebody out there, I really do believe that. I think that we have to go through these certain challenges. And sometimes when you think, well, Cole can't go through anymore, God.
Right.
It may not even be Cole. It's him trying to get you.
Right. Right.
Your attention. Because he already knows that if he wanted to take Cole, he could have taken your husband a long time ago.
I know.
So right there, that's, you know what I'm saying?
No,
so
you're
you
so
know
right.
He's going to be protected in some form or fashion. Okay, I've learned to do just like you, is praise him through and during my circumstance. So I'll start calling out the promises that he made.
Right.
Because it says that you are not a man that you shall not lie. Therefore, every promise that you said in this word, you have to deliver because nothing returns to you void. So I'm going to, you said, if I glorify you, right? And like you said, you just start going down the list. And if, even when you at your weakest moment.
Oh, it's so true.
It gives you a little bit more strength and something to hope for.
Right? No, it does. And that's the key is hope.
Yeah.
You know, and reminding myself, which Amy, our JOL leader, said, you know, it's a choice every day to say, oh, my God is a good and faithful God.
Yes.
And I remember her saying that early in that fall that we were in the same group together. And I thought, I'm going to do that every day. Like, yes, I know that. But to consciously make that choice that I choose to believe and I choose to know with every fiber of my being that he is a really good.
He's a good God.
And a faithful God.
In spite
God.
Of it all. And then you think about, you know, as Christians, and you think about what Jesus went through.
Oh.
But God still said, okay, you're going to go through this this trial. You're going to go through these tribulations. You're going to go through persecution. You're going to go through it all. It's all temporary. Because at the end,
there's another side.
There's another side. And when and then what Jesus said is that whatever I'm going through is going to bring you glory. So then in turn, we're supposed to be giving him glory.
Absolutely.
You know, and then it all makes sense. It's all revealed at the right time.
Right.
Right. So you guys go through, you know, the doctor saying, I'm not leaving. I'm doing this 12-hour shift. So then we fast forward to they need to remove the thyroid, right? They remove the thyroid, then what happens?
So the big spot that was on the thyroid?
Yeah.
Benign.
Okay.
But a spot next to it, teeny tiny, was cancer.
Lord Jesus.
So honestly, and it wasn't anywhere else. And I think, I remember that day hearing that. Getting on my knees and saying, Lord, thank you for putting that great big nodule on his thyroid. Because they never would have taken a thyroid for a tiny little speck of anything. It was a speck on top of a speck. Mm-hmm. Had that nodule not been there, he would have gotten the heart.
Yeah.
Definitely, because they wouldn't have seen the cancer. But then with the anti-rejection meds, guess what would grow and show up?
Exactly.
Big old thyroid.
So God is still there in the midst of it all.
In the midst of it all.
In the midst of it all.
Truly, I was, at that point, I just said, okay, you know what? You got
me. Here it is. I totally surrender.
I do.
I totally surrender.
And it's a choice.
Yeah.
Because I thought, I have two choices. Like, I can either be in a fetal position in the corner of Cole's hospital room and my room at home. Like, that's what I felt like I wanted to do.
Yeah.
Or I can say, you know what, God? I fully trust you.
Mm-hmm.
I know you've got this. And you're already showing me step by step. He shouldn't have been able to walk into that hospital for a doctor's appointment.
Amen.
He shouldn't have had a giant nodule that was nothing.
Yeah.
Just so that we could get out the cancer that would have hindered his life.
Exactly.
Post-transplant. I mean, there were angels everywhere. I saw him in every detail. And so did Cole.
Yeah.
And the day that we found out, he had to have a heart transplant. He was silent for about 45 minutes after the doctor left. And then he said two things to me. Mm-hmm. He said, okay, I want you to call the girls right now. We have three daughters that were all out of Houston. And he said, and the second thing is only positivity in room 17. This could be a long haul and we're going to be positive every day.
Every day.
And, you know, I for the most part was, he always was, no doubt about it. Yeah. His faith after that, I think that thyroid just disaster and it just strengthened both of our faith. Yeah. And he was like, I'm good. And he said too, if God feels like this is my time, you know what? I'm okay. He has shown himself to me. And I, you know, to get there was crazy.
Yeah.
But, you know, God also did things like he sent so many angels throughout the walls and halls of that hospital. Yeah. I mean, random things. Like he was on the 10th floor and I had my routine of the same way I walked to the car because I was there about three times a day.
Yeah.
And I got into an elevator, went all the way down 10 floors, almost to the car. And I realized I forgot my cell phone in Cole's room. Had to go all the way up, back up, which is an ordeal. Grab my cell phone. And I'm thinking, this is when I'm just starting to break. Like little things like that were really getting to me.
You know, yeah.
I get into the elevator, and this is probably day 40 at Methodist.
Mm-hmm.
And I get into the elevator, and there's a med student there. She's got her white coat on. And she said, oh my gosh, your husband is the one waiting for a heart, right? The young guy? And I said, yes. She said, oh my gosh, we're all so excited for him to get his heart because we just think he's going to do so great. Like, and anyway, she was... It just helped make me cry because she was exactly what I needed.
Right.
We're getting weary. It's been 40 days.
Yeah.
And this first or second year med student that said, we are so excited to see how he does. Like, we talk about it all the time. Yeah. And I thought, well, once again, God, you had me leave my phone up there.
And so I'm upset. I'm trying to be in my frustration mode.
I'm mad.
I got to go back upstairs.
I'm stomping.
Yeah, I'm frustrated. And here you go. Showing up again. Okay, now I can't even be mad. I got to praise you again.
He's like, Carla, you can't
give you
you
everything.
Can try all you can, but I'm not going to let you be mad at me. You know, and it was like, okay, God, you are really something.
But you know what's so beautiful about that too? That God will use
a superhuman. Like, I'm so human, it's embarrassing.
But no, it's not. It's beautiful because that is how we feel. It is hard. You went through... You know, it's hard watching somebody you love go through that.
Yeah.
It's hard as a mom wondering if my children's dad is going to make it the next day.
Yes.
It's hard being a caretaker.
Oh, my gosh.
Come on. You know.
Yeah. No, it is.
And so, but as women and as mothers, we put on the S on our chest and we just keep going when we want to break down. And by the grace of God, he's like, here, I'm holding you. I'm carrying you. And I'm going to give you little bitty tidbits, little bitty drops of nuggets. The medical student in the white coat was the angel you needed that day because God knew what you needed.
And I could tell you 25 stories like that. Yeah. It was just
amazing. So you get the cell phone, you go home. Because Cole has already said, I want positivity in room 17. And I want you to tell the girls, when you had to make the call to your daughters, how was that?
That was brutal.
Yeah.
One had just started med school 3 days earlier.
Yeah.
That she knew too much. It wasn't good.
Because she was already, it was nothing you could try to keep from
her. You can't sugarcoat that one.
No, you can't sugarcoat. Okay, because she wants to know everything. And what she doesn't know, she's going to find out.
Right. And he can't go anywhere. So I'm talking in the room with him, this tiny room.
Yeah.
So it's not like I can say, you're not going to believe what I'm about to tell you. Mm-hmm. I was like, well, okay, so we just talked to the doctor because I'm trying to be positive. He had just told me to be positive.
Right.
And my daughter, the one that's going to be a doctor, said, why are you so chipper about this? This is not anything to be chipper about. But I couldn't say, because he's right here. And I said, well, you know what? I understand. Anyway, it was tricky.
Yeah.
It was not easy to tell them. And she almost didn't. She wanted to withdraw. So she said, I'm going to withdraw.
She was going to withdraw. Yeah, I remember
that. But Cole got on the phone with her and he said, uh-uh. You know what? You want to do this because this is how, and this is true, this is how she felt like she could glorify God best in her life was through medicine.
Yeah.
He said, I'm being well taken care of. You bring me joy by doing this. You can't stop.
Right.
You need to do what you do. So she did stay.
So that was
it was
good.
A rough beginning. It was very rough.
And then what happened with the other two?
The other two were together when I told them. They were living together in Los Angeles.
Okay.
And, you know, everyone handles it differently.
Yeah.
And they were an amazing support for each other. And that was no accident that they ended up randomly, totally different jobs, being together and living together.
Yeah.
Because the youngest one had an internship in LA,
mm-hmm.
and the middle one didn't get one until late, and it ended up being in Los Angeles.
Wow.
So she said, can I live with the sister? And they were like, yeah, of course. So they ended up living together. I mean, God had it all
planned.
He had it all set up beautifully.
Yeah.
I mean, he knew. Obviously, he knew
what
was going to happen. But you know, what was so helpful to us through the whole situation, too, was to see, to think back on God's humanness. I mean, he asked the Father in the Garden of Gethsemane,
mm-hmm.
can you take this away from me? Like, can you please take this?
And
so I thought, you know what? It's okay for me to say, you know what, God, can you really not make this happen?
Right.
And if you do, just give me, just align my heart to your will and help me to get through this.
Right.
But if you feel like you can take it away, have at
it. Go right ahead.
I'm good.
Yeah.
And he didn't.
And he didn't.
But you know, I the interesting thing, I would say the overriding thing that we learned from this whole process is it really wasn't about Cole and his heart.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't about me
mm-hmm.
and learning to care for him. It was about God using the both of us to, you know, really be a witness to people, to really show them what surrender looks like, what grace looks like, that it's really, really real, and what redemption is like.
Yes.
If someone had said to me 2 years ago when he was going through his anxiety and his depression, he was basically miserable to be around physically and mentally, oh, Carla, a heart transplant is going to redeem your husband and your marriage, I would have said, go jump in a freaking lake.
Yeah.
No, it's not.
Yeah.
No.
Like, you don't know what I'm going through.
Yeah, you have no idea.
Yeah.
And it was.
And now.
So, yeah.
That he can restore and he can redeem.
Oh, my gosh.
Like,
in ways that you cannot imagine.
You cannot imagine or fathom. And that's the beauty of having a relationship with God. And what I've come to learn is that when you can cross over to complete surrender,
mm-hmm.
and that's the challenge. But that's where he wants you to break.
Yeah.
So that he can come into your life and give you all those desires of your heart, as we speak about heart. And that's just not, you know, we're talking about in health and in wealth and being able to do, and I'm not talking about finance. I'm just talking about a person who is in alignment with God is a person who has great wealth.
Yes, absolutely.
Wealth of wisdom and knowledge that you can be used in ways that in your humanness, you would say no. But by the grace and the Holy Spirit, you say yes. And that's why I wanted you to share your story with others, because somebody's going through, be it a heart transplant, be it whatever illness that
life
they're going
hard.
Through. Life is not always easy, but it's necessary so that you can cross over to complete surrender so God
so
can
true.
Do his business. And then you can do his business by glorifying and sharing the testimony and sharing your experience with others. And that is just so, I'm getting full. Because I think about all the things he did in my life and then how he connects us all.
I know.
Isn't that amazing?
Yes.
To be able to share his glory. So we glorify him. So we come back to, you tell the girls, when does this, and you're waiting on the heart.
For 53 days.
For 53 days, you're waiting for it to come.
And then day 53 comes.
Wow.
And what's so crazy, so Methodist has a chapel,
mm-hmm.
really wonderful chapel. So that's where I would go to, I'm Catholic, I would go to Mass there on Sunday. And then I would see Cole, go down for Mass, come back up. On that particular Sunday, it was August 19th,
mm-hmm.
I was at Mass. And his doctor that has taken care of him forever, his cardiologist, it also works in Mexico. So he's only in Houston every 2 months or so. He happened to be on call that weekend, and he's a very strong Catholic. He loves the Lord, has a great big family, wonderful marriage. After communion, I'm on my knees and I'm praying, And I feel this tap on the shoulder, and it's Dr. Torre. Mm-hmm. And he was in the communion line. So that was all great. That night, I'm in the room with Cole, and Dr. Torre comes in, and he said, I have some news for you. And he said, and I'm going to tell you why I have news for you. Mm-hmm. Because your wife and I were praying for you today.
Wow.
And he said, we have a heart for you.
Wow.
And it was so overwhelming. Cole broke down in tears. And really, the tears were interesting. So I said to him, what are you feeling? Mm-hmm. And the first thing he said was, the day that is saving my life is someone's worst nightmare.
Yeah.
A young 34-year-old man lost his life. We don't know how.
Yeah.
But and his family chose to keep him going through my husband. So yeah. It's a gift.
It's a gift, and then it's a feeling of you are overwhelmed.
Overwhelmed.
Because you're thinking about someone else's loss.
Absolutely.
You know? And you can only do that when you, what my spirit tells me, is that when you are in line with God, because someone who's not will be like, okay, yeah.
Exactly.
You know what I'm
saying?
You're
thinking about yourself.
And there's nothing wrong with, thank you, God, you know, okay, it's coming. But at the same time, someone who's in tune with, yes, we're going to celebrate, but at the same time, someone else is mourning.
Absolutely.
You know? But what a gift that 34-year-old man.
Oh, my goodness.
Who made that decision to say, this is what I want to do.
And his family to be able to do that.
To be able to say, go help someone else. God is all over this place.
He's all over this place.
You know?
And it turned out the donor was at the hospital next door to Methodist.
Are you serious?
This does not happen. Usually they're transported in helicopters and all kinds of business. No, it was a van that drove. And so when, this is kind of an interesting, strange thing to think about, but because the donor was so close, and they said, Cole's OR time is going to be the exact same as the donor. So they went into the ORs together in the separate hospitals. The heart was harvested, was driven a block over, and given to my husband an hour and a half later.
That's nothing but the grace of God.
I
you can't even make this up.
I can't make it
up. You can't make it up.
And here's the craziest. So at Methodist, Dr. DeBakey is the famous heart surgeon, you know, world famous.
World famous.
And the Fondren Brown OR-10 is the most famous operating room where the first heart transplant was done and all of that here, you know, his. And when Cole was 16 years old, he shadowed Dr. DeBakey in OR-10, was able to, you know, just stand and, you know, hand an instrument over. At that time, you could do that. And that's the OR that has like an observation deck and all of this. So, and he did that in August of his junior year in high school. In August, exactly 40 years later, almost to the day, I think it was off by 4 days.
Yeah.
He was in the Fondren Brown OR-10 getting a transplant himself. Here's even crazier.
I know. That's why my eyes are welling up because I remember this story.
I could just barely. Like, he got his heart on a Monday. Mm-hmm. And they were closing the Fondren Brown operating rooms on that Friday forever to be a museum and an exhibition because they're moving to a fancy new tower with all kinds of new stuff. And he made it by 4 days.
By 4 days.
Having a transplant in the very room that he worked
in. That he worked in.
40 years earlier.
With Dr. DeBake.
Yes. So here's...
You can't even make this
no,
up.
No, I can't make it up even if I tried. So he had his transplant on August 20th, and usually you're in the hospital for a couple weeks, sometimes months if there's complications, but I will never forget, his birthday is August 30th. He turned 56 on the 30th, and he called me. I was getting ready to come up to the hospital. He called me 10 days with his new heart, and he said, I just got the best birthday present. I'm going home. I'm like, what?
What?
It had been 10 days since the heart. So he went, that was his birthday present.
That he was able to go home.
So the family had on our front porch 3, 4, 5, 6 number balloons because he got a 34-year-old heart at 56.
At 56.
So it was quite a birthday present.
What a beautiful testimony.
I mean, God just kept saying, let me put an exclamation point on your new heart.
Yeah.
And so then the evening that he got the heart, the surgeon comes out. Just to give you an idea of how sick he was, the surgeon came out and I said, you know, to tell us everything went well. And I said, what did his old heart look like? Could you tell it was different? And the surgeon played rugby in college. He was a big guy. He said, Cole's heart was the size of my head. This man is probably 6'3", very sturdy.
Are you serious?
He said it was that like enlarged? A small watermelon at my head.
Oh, my Lord.
To which we almost had a pass out over that.
But, oh, my God.
So, you know, thank God.
God
he
is suggest- good.
That, he said, we know that chemotherapy continually dilates the heart until it just can't pump anymore. So you and me, our hearts pump at anywhere between 50 and 65%. That's right. The amount that it can pump. His was pumping at 7. So that's very close to not pumping.
It's basically not pumping. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
What a beautiful, beautiful tip.
But I told Cole, he said, this is my third life. Because I had my first life.
Yeah.
Then I had my surviving cancer life and my second life. And now I've got this new heart. And I said, you know what that means? God has got a lot for you to do.
A lot.
It's not time to kick up your feet. And he agrees.
Yeah. And he's willing because he knows that he can inspire and encourage others to come to know God the way that he has and the way that your family has. And I'm sure it's brought your family together.
Oh, it closer. Has. And he's a very private person. Like he couldn't talk about his cancer situation for about 10 years after remission.
Yeah.
And this has been so different. He's an absolute open book. And so we had a Caring Bridge site during the whole ordeal. And he said, on one of our last posts on Caring Bridge, he said, I want you to put on Caring Bridge that I would like to pray for all the people who have prayed for me. So if anyone has any prayer requests, to give them to me. And he said, and tell them that I promise to every day, like pray it forward, literally.
Yeah.
Pray back to anyone who needs prayer. And Monique, I cannot tell you how many people, they didn't give prayer requests on Caring Bridge, but emailing him, calling me, texting him. He now prays for 75 people every night. He's got a notebook next to his bed.
Yeah.
And
that's beautiful.
I mean, it's just...
That's beautiful.
2 years ago, I was wondering where his faith was.
And now look at him.
Look at God just said, be patient, sister.
Be patient. I got this. Be still and know that I...
That's right.
Yeah.
I am so bad at being still.
But now you... He helped you to be still because there was nowhere else for you to go.
Oh, that's right.
You know what I'm saying? Except to trust him.
Remember what Beth Moore said in one of our video Bible studies? She said, he's going to get you to your knees one way or the other. So you either go down voluntarily
or
he's chopping you.
He's just going to chop your knees.
I got chopped.
Yeah.
I thought I was voluntary, but I also got chopped.
Hey, I thought that I was too. You know what I'm saying? Because I want to be in control and I want it. I'm going to pray my will and Lord, just make it work the way that I want you to work. You know what I'm saying? I can help you with this. If you just do it this way, it'll work. And he's like, no, sister.
He doesn't like those if thens.
I don't need you to help me. And so, I think if he knows that you are going to do his will and share his word, he has to prune you.
Right. Oh, he,
you know what I'm saying? And a part of being pruned by God is that you have to come into complete surrender. But I'm telling you, once you can master lifting your hands up and your heart and removing your human self out of the way, it is the most beautiful transition of peace.
It's surreal.
It is so surreal.
I mean, I kept saying to myself during this 65-day period, I would walk to his room and I'm thinking, I should not be okay. Like I would literally talk to myself out loud.
Yeah.
And I'm like, grace feels amazing.
Doesn't it feel amazing?
Like I can't, when people would say, how are you? I'm like, I'm good.
Yeah.
Like I can't explain why, but for the grace of God.
Yeah.
Like I really, and I told my daughters too, I said, you know, when this was all said and done and they didn't have to worry and we could be on the other side of it. I said, you know, here's the hard truth to know is that when things are going so well and we love those periods in our life, they're great and we have them to recharge, but we don't get better through that.
No, we don't.
We can have joy and we can be thankful,
right.
But our character isn't shaped. We're not chiseled during that period as women of people of God.
Yeah.
I said, it's only through the hard things. Yeah. And I said, it's a big fat bummer. Like, I want to say to God, oh, I will chisel during good stuff. Just try me.
Yeah.
But I don't. I get complacent. Yeah, I feel good.
If we can move our humanness out of the way and just allow God to do his business. But when you get there, it's a challenge. But like you said, it's a choice.
It's a choice. I really do feel like it's a choice. And it's like, I feel like we were running the race. We crossed that finish line. And he didn't just put a medal on me. I mean, mm-hmm. I can't even describe mm-hmm. what he did for both of us. Yeah. Really, our whole family.
For your whole family.
And I don't know. I really feel sad for anybody who doesn't believe. Because mm-hmm. I don't know how you do things
how
like this.
How you make it.
How you make it.
Without not having faith or, you know, hope or belief in God. I don't know. But you know what I do know? Is that someone... Maybe they don't, but by listening to this testimony,
I hope so.
It can encourage them to want to know the God
right.
that we serve.
Right.
Because that's what we do, right? You're a missionary in your own city.
Right.
You know what I'm
right.
saying?
Oh,
a missionary
I love that.
When you go into to work. A missionary yeah. when you go and do charitable things at MD Anderson or, you know, wherever we go now because God has chiseled us.
He has.
It's something different. Sometimes you don't even have to speak. It's in the eyes. It's in the smile.
No, it's
in
the touch. It's so true. It's just in your demeanor, like your peace.
Exactly. And it exudes out. And so God knows who will do his business. And he knows that person who doesn't have that faith yet. When you stood up there and you shared your story, there was not a dry eye.
Including mine. Which was not what I wanted to do, but darn.
No, but it's authentic. It's genuine. It's like, y'all have no idea how much love I have for God because of the love he has for me.
I know.
You know what I'm saying? And you can feel it.
I really realized when Amy, our leader, had asked me to speak. I mean, honestly, the pre-transplant situation, Carla, would have said, you know what, let me think about it. And then I would have figured out a way to get out of it.
You know, actually, that day, I'm really busy. I'm not even going to be there that day.
I don't think I can share on that day. But I didn't even hesitate. She said, you can take time to think about it. I said, I don't need to. I'll do it.
Right.
And I thought, you know what?
Yeah.
I'll figure out how to get it done.
So not only was God giving your husband a new heart, he gave you one too.
He did.
Yeah.
He really, really did. Yeah. Because I thought, if there's just one person that can go, wow, really?
Yeah.
And crazy stories. So about a week after that, the sharing day, a lady that I'm really close to, she works at St. John's School right here where my girls went to school. And she called me up and said, oh my goodness, I picked up a friend of mine to go. We do this annual Christmas luncheon with a bunch of ladies or whatever. And she said, my friend got in the car and I said, how are you? And she said, I have to tell you the story that I heard a week ago at my Bible study. This girl talked about her walk through a heart transplant. And it was, I don't know this woman. She's in a different group. I don't even know what she looks like. But she was telling my good friend, and my good friend said, was that Carla? Mm-hmm. She said, I think her name was Carla. And she said, oh, I know her. This woman at St. John's, her ex-husband was my husband's cardiologist for a while. I mean... Just, anyway, can I make this stuff
no,
up?
You can't make
so I was
it
like,
up.
Well, there's one person that at least I know.
And sharing a story.
And sharing it.
Sharing a story.
Taking it outside of our sharing day to somebody in a car on the way to a happy Christmas
luncheon.
And
that's what that was supposed to do.
You're and I think that was God saying, see?
See?
I
told
don't
you,
around.
Trust me. I'm still. Well, this has just been so enlightening. I'm full
well,
all over
with
again.
You is enlightening
well,
for me.
Well, I love you. I feel
kidding.
The same.
I love you too.
Yeah, I've always felt that way about you because you do have this light around you. You do.
You
really
are
do.
Transfigured, my friend.
Oh my gosh! Look, so, we'll continue complimenting.
We do have mutual love for you. It's
we
a
do.
Love fest.
It's a love fest going on. So I want to thank you for taking the time to share your testimony with me and with others because I know that I know that I know.
Yeah.
That somebody listening needed to hear it, and it's going to change their life.
I hope so.
And it's going to change their heart for God. And I know it without a shadow of a doubt. And I thank you for being a true witness, a true servant, and a true woman of God.
I thank God for thinking I could handle it. That's the best. But, you know, here's what I would say to, you know, what I would want to say to someone who came to me who didn't believe is that there's no downside. Give it a shot.
Hey.
Like, try it. There is no downside. It doesn't cost you anything.
Yeah.
You have to do it. You know, there's nothing you have to arrange. You just have to trust.
Yeah.
Learn, trust, believe. Eventually.
And I think that's beautiful advice. Thank you, Carla.
Thank you, Monique. Much love to you.
Wow, wow, wow. What an amazing testimony of faith that Carla shared with us about her husband's different health challenges, starting with cancer, being diagnosed with heart failure that would need a heart transplant, all of the different signs and the people and the angels that God placed along their journey so that Carla could share it with us, should give us all hope and something to believe in, that when God is in control, all things are truly possible. Until the next podcast, God bless.